All right, ladies and gentlemen, and strength coaches everywhere, welcome back to the Conjugate Chats. Before we start getting into the episode with our fantastic guests, we have a couple ad reads to get through. The first one is the Working Dog Coffee. So there's so many people I know mindlessly consume coffee through disturbing products on the market. The solution we have is offering an organic coffee product that doesn't have any of the nasty side effects as a poorly regulated energy drink. The only products you'll see on the label are 100%, yes, 100% organic coffee with organic flavoring. We have two flavors, the mild and the burner, are a great mix of a high caffeine product and a classic Colombian favorite blend for the coffee lovers. You can go to the website and use the code CHATS for 15% off, and every bag you buy will help support Working Dog charities around the country. Now, let's get into our other sponsor, which is Team Builder. Team Builder is the software for performance coaches around the world. Their powerhouse platform provides coaches with an elevated experience when it comes to program development, data tracking, and staying connected with athletes and clients. Team Builder is full of tools that coaches need, like multiple max training methods, 16-plus reports, evaluation testing, and goal setting, to name a few. Coaches also have access to consults with Team Builder's in-house sports scientists to help manage and analyze data. Head to teambuilder.com and sign up with the promo code CONJUGATE to receive a 30-day free trial as well as a 52-week football workout program. And with that in mind, let's jump into the episode.
That wrestling is like the one of the last great frontiers that like Feed the Cats really needs to get into. Like, I mean, there isn't a grindier sport than this. Like,
and welcome back to another episode of the Conjugate Chats. Today we have a very special guest coming on. He is the host of the NHSSCA podcast that I've recently been on, and so have many other great strength coaches like Monty Sparkman. He is a big track and field guy. Up in Rochester, Illinois, is Andrew McGackie. That for now? Okay. I'm having a tough time with last names, man. It's really a struggle. So, Andrew, welcome to the Conjugate Chats, man. Awesome to have you on. Fired up for season 5, man.
Yeah, man. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. So, again, I kind of alluded to this. It's no surprise that you're a really big track guy or a big throwers guy. So, what really started all of that?
You know, track was the first sport I did. My middle school, we started track in fifth grade. I was an incredibly unathletic individual. So what happens in middle school track when you're unathletic is you just become a thrower by default. So, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I remember the first day at track practice, I bought track spikes and I wore them into the discus ring. And I just remember all the high school kids laughing at me. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. And so that began my lackluster throwing career. And then, you know, at post high school, went to Western Illinois University, and I was a phys ed major. And I talked to my one of my phys ed instructors, and I just told him, like, hey, I really want to get into coaching. It's just something I'm really passionate about. And he connected me with the athletic director there in Macomb, Illinois, where Western Illinois is located. And I started as a volunteer throws coach. You know, I was 18 years old, didn't know anything, thought I knew everything. And then that just progressed on. You know, that would have been 2014, first year coaching. And, you know, I've been doing it ever since, and I absolutely love it. And it's progressed into, you know, just such a huge part of my life. You know, now I'm coaching throws obviously for our high school team, and I'm coaching a lot of really talented young athletes on the club side. I have my own throws club that I coach through, and so yeah, throwing has just been a huge part of the last decade plus of my life, and I absolutely love it.
Awesome, man. I was a thrower as well in high school, and kind of got stuck in, I don't want to say stuck, but kind of got put in the discus ring just because, like, had longer arms. I think my coach was like, well, you can get like some good torque off of that, and, whatever. Wasn't really good discus thrower. Found myself in shot put a lot of times. But yeah, throwing was a lot of fun for that brief time period. The college, Eureka College. I know we kind of talked about it with the NHSSAA pod. Didn't really have track that, like 2015. I think that was the last year they had track, and then they kind of cut it from there. So didn't really get to expand on that. But yeah. So tell us a little bit more about your background. How did you kind of get into the role that you're in now in Rochester? I know you do some of the strength stuff with some of the teams there. How did you get in that position?
Oh gosh. Like I said, after high school, I went to Western Illinois University, and college ultimately didn't work out well for me. It's just life got in the way, started working, had bills to pay, right out of high school, I was paying all my bills on my own, and like a lot of people, and I just didn't really handle it the best, not gonna lie. And I also working full time and stuff like that. And the college route just wasn't for me at that point in my life. And so, but I started coaching at 18, started coaching track, volunteered for a year. The next year, the football coach asked me to come on. So I was coaching football. Then became a paid track coach. And then my third year, three that third season, that following season, my third season coaching, I actually applied and became the head boys track coach at the high school. And that was a huge pivoting moment for me in life, just for various reasons. And so that began that coaching career. And then, so I was the head coach of Macomb. I was 20 years old and trying to do the best I could. If I'm going to do something, I want to do it well. I want to be good at it. It's just, who I am. I don't want to do anything halfway. And so I just started diving into training and all that stuff. And I noticed that, strength and conditioning was kind of a major deficit. I didn't want that to be a weakness for my team. So I started researching strength and conditioning. And we had, like, as a high schooler, I took strength training. I worked out a lot in high school. That was a huge part. It was mandatory. If you were on the football team, you had to lift weights, right? And, so that became a huge part of, who I was in high school. And I was definitely one of those kids that strength and conditioning was the reason that I was able to play and start on our football team. I wasn't very talented, I wasn't overly athletic, but I worked out all the time and I just got strong. And, we were a double tight, double wing football team. We ran dive and trap and buck and all that stuff. And so you had to be a big, strong kid, and that was how you got on the field. So, I really grinded away in high school. And so I loved working out, and that carried into, when I moved and became an adult, I kept working out on my own. So anyway, here I am, a young head coach, looking into strength, like looking into and learning as much as I can about the strength training side of things. Meanwhile, in the background, Macomb, where I was coaching, also recognized that there was a deficit there, right? And so what the boosters started doing was they started hiring grad students from WIU that were going into strength and conditioning. Okay. And so first year, there was a guy named Anthony. He was incredible. I remember him. He left such an impression on me. He was so great at his job. But then he was a grad student, so the next year he was gone. So then there was another guy, he was there for a year, and then he was gone. And then we had a third guy come in, and he was there. He was technically there for 2 years. The second year was the COVID season, was cut short because of COVID, and then he was gone. And so he was they those guys were doing all the strength training for the football team and some of the other teams. Myself and the girls track coach, we wrote our own strength programs for our teams just because it was a lot easier from a time standpoint. And it was just with track and field, and the strength training can go so hand in hand from a practice standpoint, lining high neural days and low neural days and all those things. And so, we just kind of took that over on our own. And I was just falling in love with this process of writing workouts. And I got approached by the head football coach at the time. And he was like, "Look, dude, a lot about this. I think you should just be the guy doing it for everybody." And so I got approached by the school And they said, "Hey, you're going to be here for a long time. We know you're invested in the school. You coach two sports. You're present. Instead of going through this revolving door of grad assistants, we just want it to be you. We think you're the guy." And so, that was a really how my strength and conditioning career took off. This would have been 2019, 2020, somewhere around there. And so I did. I became the strength coach at Macomb. I started training any team that would work with me. I was on the football staff, so that included the football team, obviously the track team. I had some young female athletes that started coming, and then that kind of population grew. And then, the soccer team came on board, and the tennis team, and then the wrestling team. And so there were a few teams that it wasn't like a huge part that they didn't prioritize, but for the most part, then I just started training everybody, and it was fantastic. And I loved it, and I grew a lot. And I think I did a pretty bang up job while I was there. Fast forward 2 years ago, I'm dating my girlfriend, and she graduates with her master's as a speech therapist. She starts applying for jobs, and she gets one here in Chatham, where we live now. And it was just kind of a no-brainer. It was tough to leave Macomb, but it is what it is. When she accepted this job here in Chatham at an elementary school, I started reaching out to coaches in the area. I reached out to one coach, track coach, that I really respected, and I thought that was going to be the way it goes. But then I reached out to Derek Leonard, who's the head football coach at Rochester, who I had kind of had a connection with because before, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later, but I had interviewed him for a previous podcast that I had. And so I reached out to him, and he said, "Call me." And I did. And, he was so excited to have me. He's like, "Man, I would love to have you. We need another O-line coach. I think you'd be a great fit, all these things." And then I reached out to the high school track coach. And because I was kind of picky about where I was going to go, I wanted to make sure it was a good fit. I do hold my coaching experience and knowledge in pretty high esteem. Like, not from like an ego standpoint, I just respect the amount of time and effort I put into becoming the coach that I am. And I reached out to him, and man, what I thought was going to be like a 5-minute phone call turned into like an hour and a half of just talking training and philosophy and all this stuff. And dude, we really hit it off. And I was like, "Well, Rochester's where I want to be." So I applied and got hired at the school as a special ed aide, as a paraprofessional and football coach and boys track coach. And it was, so that was last this not this obviously this is my second year, so last year. And man, it was just an awesome time. I wasn't training anybody, wasn't doing anything strength and conditioning wise. That's not something that they were really doing. They had a guy training the football team, who still is primarily training the football team. And it started out at Rochester, and one of the teachers whose class I was in, her daughter was an eighth grader. And she had kind of heard of what I did at Macomb. And she was like, "Hey, would you train my daughter and her friends after school?" "Sure." So that started out with like five kids. Well, then the special ed teacher whose room I was in, she's the assistant softball coach. So then she told the softball coach about me. So then I started training some of the softball girls. And then obviously I'm a track coach. And so Matt wanted me to handle that part. So now that I'm training the high school boys team. And then that turned into, just various opportunities. Well, Derek, our head football coach, we had kind of had some conversations, and he's like, "I think I can get you." He teaches strength and conditioning, like the class. And he's like, I think I can get you in here." And I mean, he really advocated for me. And at the end of last school year, the administration approached me, and we said, "We think you're the guy," kind of like Macomb did. And so they moved me into the role I'm at now, as technically on paper, I'm still a paraprofessional. Like, that's my official title. I'm not the director of strength training or anything like that. I have no official title because technically those positions don't exist. What I am is a paraprofessional on paper, and I spend my days teaching strength training with Coach Leonard. I write all the programming. I train everybody in class. And then outside of class, I train various groups and teams. And really, my role and my goal is to provide quality strength and conditioning for everybody outside of the football team. Obviously, I still work with those guys because I have them in class. And like, a lot of those guys are in baseball that I'm, and I write their programs, or they're on the track team and I write their programs, blah, blah, blah. Just in-season football players and off-season guys that are just off-season football, their programming is handled by somebody else, and that's, you know, that is, that's okay. And yeah, man, I moved to a new school, made them aware of what I had done, and then just have slowly shown my value and been given larger roles. You know, last summer I trained the boys soccer team, and that was a amazing experience, and they were totally bought in. And now I've got other teams reaching out trying to get summer training going on this coming summer, you know, in a couple months. And so it's just slowly grown, right? And it's just been an incredible experience, and I'm just incredibly grateful. You know, I got to be a part of Rochester winning their ninth state championship since 2010. You know, I mean, that was just a huge experience. You know, our track team is really young, but we've got some dudes, man. We're going to be a force in a year or two. So that's really exciting. And you know, it was tough to leave Macomb. I built up some really great relationships there with administration and teachers and athletes and coaches. But, you know, at the end of the day, this was the right move, and I'm so happy to be a Rocket.
Awesome, Andrew. Awesome. It's funny how kind of a word of mouth gets around in school, and then you find yourself kind of tied in the different teams, and then eventually, you know, you've got four, five, six, and now you end up with like a bunch of teams. You're like, this is not even what I came in expecting, and it's just kind of funny how stuff like that kind of works out, you know.
Yeah, and it wasn't what I expected to happen, to be completely honest with you. I actually thought I was going to have kind of a bigger role with the football team as far as strength training goes when I came here. And then, you know, that wasn't the case. And that's okay. This is not, you know, that's just speaking the reality of it. But it's been awesome having all the opportunities that I've had to build up relationships and with kids from other sports that don't play football. So, you know, I wouldn't. Maybe down the road after a couple of years, maybe that some of those things will change. But you know, it's been such a great time, and I'm so great. Like I said, I'm so grateful for the opportunities that Rochester's allotted me.
Oh yeah, man. And I have a lot of respect for track coaches too, because I was a head track coach last year for Ball for Central, and I guess I didn't realize, because I only did track for like 3 years. My senior year, I didn't get to finish it out. I went to work. So, you know, bills got to be paid. You understand that. And so our principal and our AD over at the last school kind of realized that like I did the training and that kind of happened similar way. Did things with the baseball team, softball team, football, whatnot. I was an online coach too, so they kind of like it's like they kind of understood that idea. It's like, would you want to be a track coach? And I'm like, you know what? It can't be that hard. And then you become a head track coach, and you realize it's time consuming. It can be very time consuming. Just being a head coach, you know. I always thought I was going to be a head football coach, you know, later down the road. And now seeing, you know, being the head track coach and be like understanding what that role entailed, I couldn't imagine being the head football coach and doing the things that they do all the time. But I come to say that like I respect track coaches a whole bunch, because you understand the periodization, you understand strength training, you understand like high CNS days and low CNS days, what you put your kids through, you know, sprint, you know, proper mechanics and stuff like that, you know, anything to get yourself the best advantage possible. So when you got into strength conditioning, or kind of like was like diving deep into it, what was some of the, like the resources you use as a first year head track coach?
Oh man, when I got the job as the head track coach, I remember when the AD, Dave Bartlett, when we got the phone, I immediately went on Amazon and I was like, how to coach track and field. And I bought like 10 books and I just started going through. I read like the USATF level one manual, and I read all these books and those resources. And I'm not gonna lie, man, that first year was really fake it till you make it. And you know, I did some things. Obviously, I did a lot of things wrong that I should have done better. And like for example, I was so nervous about all the kids thinking I was just a throws coach. And I was like, I know I'm going to show them that I can coach everything. So then I completely like neglected my throwers because I didn't want that, like, no, he's just a throws guy, it kind of thing. And so I really kind of ignored them and was spent so much time with all the other events and all these things. And, you know, and it was really tough because you know, it was just me and one assistant. And the head girls coach, who I love to death. I call her mom. Her name's Emily. She's been like one of the most biggest parts of my life ever since I took that over. She really took me under her wing and essentially adopted me as a surrogate son. I mean, she was so good to me. But that, like, that first year, she was like, I don't really know this guy, and I don't know, you know, I don't want to know how much time I want to invest into him and helping him, because like, if he's going to flake out over the first year and all these things. And so that first year was pretty rough. I mean, I was literally, I'd grab like a book and I'd go to the chapter about coaching distance, and there'd be like a sample workout. I'm like, okay, that's our workout today. I don't know why it's good. I don't know what it means. I don't, you know, I didn't understand the energy systems of nature and all those things. And it was so bad, man. Fake it till you make it. And then I just, after that first season, I knew I just wanted to make everything better. So that's when I really started getting into clinics and started going to all these things. I got USAT level one certified, and I really dived into the TFC culture and that crowd and those guys like Tony Holler and like what they were doing from a programming perspective. And so, you know, those early resources on how to coach track for me was just reading books and articles and things of that nature, stuff I saw on Simply Faster, a little bit of YouTube, and just eventually over time developing a knowledge base that was actually legitimate and usable and my own, and then slowly shaping what my programming for all those events looked like on their own. You know, I've at some point, being the head coach, I've coached everything except for pole vault. I'm adamant that I don't coach pole vault. I don't know anything about pole vault. I mean, I understand the physics of it, but it's something that I could never relate to them in a relatable way, right? I can't convey that information to them in a way like high jumpers I can talk to, because, you know, yes, you got to set the bar at 4.2, but I can show them how to run a curve and like what to jump off. It's not going to look pretty. I can show the long jumpers how to bound and how to do these things. I am not like, unless we have a pole made of rebar, it's going to snap. I ain't showing them how to vault. So, you know, I other than that, I've coached everything. And that honestly just took time. And I spent years just attacking the different disciplines of track and working my way through them, because depending on who my assistant was, and I, you know, that rotated, you know, most of my assistants were college kids that were just there for a year, maybe two. So some years I was the distance coach, some years I had to be the jumps coach, the sprint coach, all these things. And you know, being a track coach, you just have to wear many hats, because the disciplines are so different, man, and the training requirements are so different. And yes, you can generalize as much as you can, and you should, just from a simplicity standpoint, but it's so tough. Triple jumpers need different things than high jumpers, and the hurdlers need different things from your other sprinters. And but then you have 110 sprinters and you have 300 meter sprinters, and those are completely different races, from your 800 to your 2 mile, from the 100 to the 400 shot put disc. I mean, it's insane, man. It's truly such a juggling act, and I tip my hats to track coaches everywhere, because it is so it's hard. You know, most of the time, in my experience, you're understaffed just criminally. You know, your football team will have 30 coaches who are all standing in one area watching the same scrimmage. But like at track, you'll have one, two, hopefully maybe three guys that are spread out over a couple acres. You know, it's wild. Absolutely insane. And so, you know, I'm doing a bad job of answering your original question, but you know, those resources that you talked, like, you know, like for me, it was just a lot of books, a lot of learning, and then going into clinics, and then obviously the greatest educator's time, and just looking at it. The beauty of track and field is that it's so data driven, it's objective, you know, and you're constantly getting evaluated every week on meet performances. And obviously not every meet is a PR, but like, you should identifying trends and seeing, are we moving in the right direction? Is the needle moving where we want it to be? How are we peaking? You know, how do we look after indoor season? How do we look on sectionals? And just looking at it and evaluating it from a case-by-case study of kids on your team, and then tweaking it how you think best, and then going to the next season. And did it work? Okay. Yes, we were better peaked at sectionals, but man, our big invite, we tanked. And looking at the training, and what are you doing? My throwers like do really well at this meet. But then, like, you know, then they were in like a 3 week pool. Well, what was wrong? What can we manipulate from a volume standpoint, from a drill standpoint, obviously in the weight room standpoint? There's so many factors that go into it, and like, it just took me years and years of experience, and I'm still trying to figure it out. Like, I've been doing this, you know, 10 plus years. I'm only 29 years old. I got a lot of time left, and I'm sure I'm still gonna be figuring it out for years to come, and just trying to like nail it down.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one thing last season when, I was taking over track program was like understanding that we're not supposed to peak the first track meet. You know, we have a long-term goal that a lot of kids, I think, didn't realize at the time. Like, we had like 6, 7 track meets lined up, and like the first one they went all out. It's like, yeah, we got, this time, and we threw this far, and we jumped this high. It's like, that's great, but we still have 6 more track meets to go, and our last one is probably supposed to be our best one right before sectionals, and that sectional is supposed to be our best one before we go, if we get the opportunity to go to state and whatnot. And I guess in their minds they didn't understand that, like, not every meet you're going to PR, but there's some progress along the way. Like, you're not supposed to peak, first track meet. And I think that started to develop their minds, like, okay, let's train a little bit harder this go around. Let's, on Mondays when we do our high volume sprints or anything like that, let's think about like the long-term goals. Like, when we go into this meet, here's our objectives, A, B, C, D thing. This is what we want to accomplish. Right. And for our throwers, and I relate to throwers a whole lot, and you can relate it too. They do a lot of pressing motions and a lot of upper body stuff and even a lot of pulling stuff, because we'd like to do, if we have a strong push, we must have a strong pull, everything like that. And our throwers really bought into that. We had a girl throw 33 on her first year ever, being in track, and she didn't understand. I think she didn't realize how strong she actually was. I mean, she wasn't like huge or anything. She just got stronger. And in season track, she never weight trained before. Over time, I was telling her, like, look, we're getting to like singles when we go to sectional, because we're trying to peak. We're trying to get our best throw. And she ended up being top 8 in sectional. So, I mean, like, I always had that appreciation for track coaches, because they understand. And like you said, they're understaffed. Oftentimes, kind of underappreciated at times as well, because you're thinking in the back of your mind of like all these kids in different events, and then you have to justify. Like, I ran into this last year, like, 4 girls want to run the 100, but you can only have 3 of them run that one event. Like, how do you justify one of them not doing it? And you deal with some of that between your athletes as well. So oftentimes I see track coaches are like underappreciated and undervalued.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of some of the things you said there, like, definitely I think track coaches get undervalued in the sense that, like, by other sport coaches too. Like, everybody, I remember a good friend of mine, we were talking about this one night, and he's like, everybody wants their kids to run track, but nobody asks the track coach if they want their kids to do that sport, right? Like, do I want my throwers playing football? Like, are you guys getting, stronger? Like, do I want my sprinters to go play football? Do I want my distance kids to run cross country? Like, do we have a good cross country program? Is that going to benefit my track program? And all these things. And track is kind of the catch all a lot of the times for all these other sports as a means to train, especially in the fall, right? And I love that. Don't get me wrong. Like, I totally, like, give me everybody, send them all. Like, right? Like, numbers in track is so huge. I mean, one of the best things you can have as a track program is a full roster, and just being able to fill all those events with even semi-competent athletes is a huge advantage, depending on where you're at, obviously. But yeah, undervalued, understaffed, it's so hard, when you try to break things up. So, like, what Coach Blaze and I do as the boys coach, I coach all the field events, he coaches all the track events. We try to make it work, right? And it's tough, because there's always carryover. Like, all my jumpers are sprinters. Like, they're all valuable parts of our relays and all those things. And so trying to navigate that. And, they're all just so technical. I mean, you could spend hours diving into understanding long jump and proper long jump mechanics and triple jump and high jump and shot put and discus and hurdling and pole vault and even sprint mechanics. I mean, there's whole courses out there on how to, like, coach sprint mechanics and block starts. And then you have handoffs that you have to focus on, and distance guys with race strategy and pacing. And man, it's so much that track coaches have to think about. And that all ties into strength and conditioning, because there's so many aspects of strength and conditioning that require a lot of understanding. Obviously, movement patterns, but then, like, all the various aspects, max effort, like high intensity training and force velocity curves and recovery training and all these things, and just all this the various aspects of strength and conditioning, like track and field. It's just a lot to manage and try to manage by yourself or with a small staff. I mean, I feel like, most strength coaches were out there kind of by ourselves doing our own thing at the school. It's just, an army of one. And, I think we're all doing our best. And I think track coaches, are all trying to do their best. And it's overwhelming. And, there's so many things, like you said, like you've got four girls that want to run it. I can only take three. And, that was something that was hard for me. Like you mentioned, peaking for the first meet. Like that first year, one of the things I did really bad was I treated every single meet like it was the biggest invite of the year. Right, we're selling out for every single meet. Oh, it's a dual on Tuesday with one other team. It's a dual meet. Well, I'm running my best kids and their best events, and everyone's going to get four events in that. And that was something that I really regretted at the end of that season, looking back. And like that kind of carries into strength training, right? Like you can't do the same exercise, like the same workout program all year round. You got to vary it up. Law of accommodating resistance. Track and field is the same way. Now, obviously, like there's differences, right? Like throwers are going to throw every meet because that's a specific craft and that's all they do. But like maybe this meet, Timmy's in the 4x1 and the 4x2. Well, next week we're just going to run the 400. Well, this meet isn't scored. We're going to treat it like a workout. You're going to run four events and it's going to be like a kind of capacity work. And or it's the middle of the season and you don't need to run your best 100 meter time or whatever. Or the weather looks really bad. Like it's gonna crazy winds, and so we're not gonna load it up because no one's gonna run super well. Depending, there's just so many factors, right? And not understanding that and being able to look ahead and plan those things out in an intelligent manner, just like with strength training, right? You look at your school calendar and you've got dates and breaks and all these things, and you're playing the long game, right? And then all those things that you're trying to do there, like when you're training a track team on the track, you're training in the weight room. This is the championship meet, the state track meet, or maybe where you're at is the sectional meet, right? Like maybe like we're trying to peak at sectionals because we don't have those kind of level of athletes yet that are going to make it to state. So we just want to have a great ending at sectionals, or even lower. Like, man, our program's down this year. We're going to go all out and try to get top five at conference as a team. And so that's the peak. We want to peak for that. And then whatever we can carry over to sectionals, great. Because I've had teams like that. And then just work your way back. Same thing you do for all these things, for all these other sports and strength and conditioning, right? Like, how can I make sure the basketball team is at their best come regional sectionals, Sweet 16, all those things, and then work your way back. The mirrors in track and field and strength and conditioning are just so abundant. And like, I was fortunate that I coached track and field before I started strength and conditioning because I was able to make those mistakes as a track coach and saw how they would affect the decisions I was making as a strength coach. And then able to kind of avoid some of those pitfalls, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Let's talk about a little bit of wrestling training. So, what's your background with wrestling training? Because I'm looking at the Google form that I guess I filled out. Then, one said you want to talk about wrestlers. So, what's your background with wrestlers?
Man, I wrestled. I started wrestling in sixth grade. The YMCA started a wrestling program. I wrestled in sixth grade and wrestled in high school. Again, just like all my athletic endeavors, very average, but absolutely loved it. And then I started training wrestlers when I was the strength coach at Macomb. Their head wrestling coach was one of my best friends. And then I came here last year. One of the kids I trained, I didn't train the wrestling team, but I trained their best wrestler, awesome kid who played football. His younger brother wrestled as an eighth grader for me. There was some turnover on the junior high wrestling staff, and the AD basically pulled me out. And he's like, "Hey, I know you know wrestling. We are desperate. Will you please be the junior high wrestling coach?" And so, I was. That was on a Monday. Had my first practice on Tuesday. We had our first meet together on Wednesday. Quite the experience. But a very important disclaimer for me personally: we had a state champion. I had a kid win the state championship at 85 pounds. The only state, wrestling, the only wrestling state champion in school history. And so it was a 1 year thing. I couldn't commit to the time. I coaching three sports is just too much. And so I didn't coach wrestling this year. So I was one and done. So I'd like to tell key people that I went out on top. I'm the only coach to have a state champion wrestler. So therefore, statistically, I'm the greatest wrestling coach in Rochester history, which is obviously not true, but it's still just super fun to say it like that. But so like strength training and just the way I ran practices last year as the wrestling coach. Like I think that wrestling is like one of the last great frontiers that like Feed the Cats really needs to get into. Like, I mean, there's a grindier sport than wrestling, and I respect the grind that wrestlers have to do. cutting weight and all those things. I just have found from my time when I was a wrestler, from seeing people wrestle, seeing how wrestlers perform, that there's such an overemphasis on aerobic capacity and grinding to the third period. And all these kids, there's such a huge app, you know, like part of the cutting weight is one of the biggest culture, you know, culture pieces in wrestling, right? And good or bad, people have varying opinions of it. I am of the school of thought, and my opinion is like, you ask a kid, well, why are you trying to cut? Like, why do you want to cut down to weight classes? Well, I'll be stronger than the kids there. Okay, but you've lost 25 pounds and you're weaker than when you started the season. So you're not like that's just not accurate. And all these kids are just cutting weight and not eating and trying all these things to get down to those weight classes. And then they get there and they're, I mean, they're substantially weaker than when they started. And so I last year with, you know, a couple of the wrestlers I was training after, like afterwards, placed a huge emphasis on maximal strength of wrestling and less on the conditional piece of wrestling. And they talked about how it's just, it was different than what they, how they trained before. And they just felt so different. Like they felt so much better. They felt strong in the first period and that carried over into the other three. And I, for me, I wish that that mindset would kind of shift a little bit in the sense of like, instead of like make forcing kids to cut weight so that they're quote unquote stronger than the kids at that weight class, just get them really strong in the weight class they're in. And then they're not going to be miserable and they can eat in a healthy caloric amount and they can feel better and they'll perform better. Now, I understand like the strategies and like my state champion, it was hard for him to get to 85. That was a grind. But we knew that that was his best chance at winning state because the kid at 90 pounds was an absolute dog. And he was, there was just, he had lost. I mean, he'd wrestled him like five times that year, had never beat him. I mean, this kid, incredible, incredible wrestler. And so he came up to me and made the decision. I was like, I want to cut to 85. And we went to, and it was hard. And obviously it paid off for him. Like, I'm not saying kids should never cut weight. Not, I don't want to advocate for that, but I just think it's too, I think it's done. Sometimes I think kids and coaches are like advocating cutting weight just because that's what you're supposed to do as a wrestler. Whereas instead, if we focus more on just getting them strong at the weight they're in and what they naturally walk around at and focus on that maximal strength standpoint, I think a lot of kids would experience more success than how the current standard is. You know what I mean? Like, I'm obviously, I coached 1 year junior high wrestling and then I helped out here and there at Macomb with their heavyweights. I'm not a wrestling guru. I'm not trying to say, but for like that, I know more than the guys that live and breathe wrestling by no means. However, I just think that from what I've seen, that we just spend more time during in the wrestling season focusing on building the maximal strength, maintaining the maximal strength that they have, maybe even trying to get them a little stronger, and less time on taking them in the weight room after they've grinded it out for 2 hours on mats and doing sets of 15 and 20 for conditioning. And then just not touching anything about getting them stronger and maintaining it. And then like they cut weight and then they're not strong. And then they don't, you know what I mean? Obviously there's kids that cut weight and win state championships. There's it's all the time. But like, I feel like from what I've seen, the average Joe Schmo cuts a weight or two, never were focused on getting stronger. They were just all their time on the mat, outside of the mat in the weight room is focused on that weight loss. And then they're weak. And I just think it's a disservice to kids. Right. And that's just something that I've been trying to like, through conversations with guys I know coaching wrestling and strength coaches, and just trying to have that conversation of like the, I don't know, a mindset shift, if you will.
Yeah, I totally understand. When you were starting to kind of speak through it, I was trying to think in the back of my mind, like I started remembering like my high school wrestling days, because up in Illinois, wrestling is like a huge deal. I didn't realize how, when I moved from my 8th grade year up to Illinois, I didn't realize how much wrestling was like a big deal. I just thought of wrestling, in Tennessee as like WWE. That's the only thing I ever was exposed to. I didn't know that. There's guys that wear singlets and headgear, and you go on the mat for 3 minutes. And I remember telling, or I'm sorry, 6 minutes, 6 minutes, 3 2-minute periods. Forgot, kind of slipped my mind. I remember telling my wrestling coach, first year I ever wrestled was my freshman year, 8th grade freshman year. Went up to a wrestling coach, and it's like I was a pretty skinny kid at the time. I was like 170. Got long arms. I think I'm still the same height that I am right now, like 5'10". He probably thought I was gonna be like this 6'1" guy, like. I was 5'10" as a freshman with these long arms. I knew he was thinking like, this kid's gonna be a tall kid, and just never happened. Anyways, I remember telling my wrestling coach, it's like 6 minutes on the mat, like that's easy. I do like an hour and a half, 2 hours on a football field, like that's nothing. And then he kicked my ass on that wrestling mat for 6 minutes and said, is it hard now? It's like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But I do understand your thought with like they needed to adapt that kind of like feed the cats mentality where fatigue is the enemy, where we want to get kids really, really strong. And I think about when kids cut, like they don't eat anything, they spit in cups, they wear a trash bag and just sweat and just try to lose. I mean, I get the tactical side of it, but from the physiological and from like even the psychological side of like that as well, like kids are so much weaker if you are like just breaking them down. I mean, you're breaking them down to a point to where like when they go perform on the mat, you're just lucky that they don't injure themselves or pass out or something like that. You're kind of praying at that point that you get lucky. And I center things like, well, if you can get a 132 wrestler to be up to 140 but get really, really strong, he's going to outmatch a lot of people later down the road. Maybe that first couple meets maybe struggle a little bit, but like most wrestlers don't weight train. Like in season, they don't weight train, and if they do, it's not that good. It's like two sets of 25 or 50 or whatever, and it's like, well, for conditioning. Do you know what the best conditioning they ever done is at wrestling practice, wrestling in a 95 to 100 degree room? Like that has been their best conditioning that they have done ever. And yeah, I get so passionate with wrestlers because I seen it, I've experienced it, and I think what some of these athletes could be if they were just went in that one higher, weight class up, got really, really strong and just dominated. Because they knew other wrestlers were going to be in this tactical of like cut to cut to cut, where we got really strong. I don't know. Just some thoughts.
And like you're saying, like, yeah, it's like two sets of 25. You see a lot of, like, when I see like wrestling programming, a lot of it is like hypertrophy work. And they're talking about for the in the name of endurance training, but really it's like a hypertrophy work. You're four sets of 8 to 10, 12 reps. And I'm like, so you're wanting these guys to do training that builds muscle, but they're in a caloric deficit. Like, what are you doing here? And it's like, cut that out. Focus on building a strong, like, trap bar deadlift. Like an overhead jerk, low singles. That's not going to be like that. Like, as muscularly fatiguing. That's going to like attack their CNS, make them more explosive. I mean, man, like a fast double leg is one of the most explosive things you'll ever see in sport. Like, especially doing it at the weight that some of these guys do, right? Or if you're watching heavyweights like tie up and then throw in a hip toss, you're like, holy crap! Like, that's like this the speed that they have to generate. And so, like, attack those. I just think we should just attack those qualities more often. And like, think of it like, obviously there's been a ton of talk and about like feed the cats in football, right? And practicing fresh and not fatigue. You could, at the end of like a you grind and grind and grind at a wrestling practice, and then like your stance is dog shit. Like, your shots are going to be dog shit. And that's very like I so like what I tried to do last year with those guys is like, man, let's not be like dead. And let's like take, 10 good like outside singles, relax for a second. 10 high out, and like instead of going like, we're gonna do 30 shots, we're gonna break that up into sets and reps, kind of like you do in strength training. And let's like attack them with higher intent, just like football, right? Like, we're gonna do like, we do 10 perfect plays, right? You gotta do 10 perfect plays. And then we break off and we relax. And then we come back and we do the next part of the script. And it's like a mental break, and it's just a little each one. I just think when you do those kinds of things, that's a little higher quality. And these are just my opinions, and obviously, like, I'm sure there's probably things that I'm wrong about, but I just think that like that's just a goal and a hope of mine, is just to see wrestling, because I think, like, obviously people talk about like the mental toughness aspect of football. It's nothing like wrestling, man. Like, I like wrestling is such a grind, and it's always going to be a grind. And I think that that's like embrace the suck and all that stuff. And I just think that's such a huge component of what wrestling culture is, good or bad. Like, I don't think it's, I'm not trying to demonize all of that by any stretch of the imagination, but I just think that like that's the hopefully like the next sport that kind of starts to shift that way. And I also, because I also think you'll get more kids out, right? Like, you know, we were talking about like, you know, I made the comment earlier, like if you can put two kids in every minute check, that's a huge advantage. You can fill a wrestling lineup. That is a major advantage. We were a pretty dang good wrestling team last year, and we lost some to some teams just because of forfeits. Like, we'll go out and pin every kid that we wrestle, but we'll lose the duel because of forfeits. Like, that sucks. And so, like, you want to get more kids up for wrestling, don't tell them that they have to lose a bunch of weight. Don't make, you know, and don't do all these things. And just, I don't know. I just think like that's like the next step that's going to help even elevate high school wrestling even higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of sit there and think about it. Like, we're sitting there talking about some of the negatives, like talking about like cutting weight and stuff like that. I also think about like some of the positives as well. I deem a lot of our neck training to wrestling, understanding how to do a neck bridge, how to go side to side, how to go backwards. I deem a lot of our tumbling stuff that we do, like our low kind of, if you want to call it contact prep, you know, to wrestling, learning how to grapple, learning how to do a double leg shot. Learning how to move your body properly. It made me a better football player because I wrestled. And I was like, I'll say an average wrestler, right? I wasn't great at it, but I wasn't terrible either. But I think the athletic qualities that we got from wrestling, learn how to do a double leg shot, a single leg shot, that takes you to be pretty athletic to do, you know, some of those things. And, you know, I think that just transfers over to other sports as well. So when we do like, when I program a neck bridge, or when I program like a reverse neck bridge on our benches, like some of our football guys are like, "Man, this hurts my neck." Like, yes, because you never trained your neck before, so the muscles are not ready for it, man. That's why we're, you know, starting with a low impact and kind of going up. And I know we don't have like that rubbery mat or that mat that we, you know, wrestled on, but we still do some things like, you know, just a normal bridge. What does that look like? Can you go side to side? Can you rock your neck, you know, back and forth? And most of our guys can't, just because they've never been taught how to. But yeah, I just think that wrestling, and it's not popular here in the South. I don't know why it's not popular here in the South. It's always been up north, and you know, in the Midwest and the Northeast. But here in the South, I wish they would adopt that sport at least to where, and it's becoming more popular, I think, in private schools. But not in the public school setting. But I just think if you kind of adopt almost like a wrestler's mentality into other sports, you start to get a little bit more athletic and start to enhance athletic qualities as well.
Yeah, and I do want to make the disclaimer. I'm not out here trying to demonize. I love wrestling. I love the sport of wrestling. I am a huge fan of wrestling. I follow it. I love it. I think it's great. And I'm not here trying to demonize anybody or demonize anything. I just think it's just a sport that like there needs to be conversations and thought process into thinking maybe that things can be done better. That's all. But yeah, man, I think part of it is just like in the Midwest and up north is you're so stuck inside during the winter. That's why I think wrestling, that's my, I don't know. I mean, that's just my guess is like down south that it's more easy to get outside. So why would you want to lock yourself in a dungeon and a, with a bunch of sweaty other guys and wrestle when you can get outside and do other things? But like, yeah, I think there are things that are wrestling does so well that goes into other sports. And I think like your wrestlers are most of the time are probably going to be your toughest kids, man. Like on your football team, on the track team, whoever. We have these brothers that you know wrestled, and I begged and pleaded for them to come out for the track team just because like they're good wrestlers, so that like they're competitive. And that was something that we knew we were going to be missing on our track program this year was like guys that were like hungry, wanted to compete. And so I begged and pleaded them to come out, and I mean they did, and it's been great because like you know they know what it's like to challenge themselves and compete against other people on an individual basis. And so, and I think like the other things that like wrestling teaches you in a good way, right, is like wrestling can promote healthy weight loss and body composition. I mean, like I was overweight kid, you know, like in high school, so I had to like work really hard to cut down to 220. And it was the healthier thing to do because I shouldn't, there's no reason for me to weigh 260 pounds, 55, 60 pounds during football. And so like there are positives to it, and there are awesome things about wrestling. Like you mentioned the neck training, man. You look at wrestlers, dude, like they got traps. Yeah, they got traps. Like that's awesome. And who doesn't want to like a honking set of traps on their shoulders, right? And their grip strength is incredible. And I think that's such an under trained aspect of athleticism is just grip strength. And because that carries over into everything, football, baseball, throwing, like grip strength, but like there's so many, there are a lot of positives that wrestling can give you. And I mean, like you just learn a lot about yourself as a wrestler, like whether you wrestle 1 year or 10 years, I mean, whatever, like just going out, like you learn a lot about who you are as an individual and like what you're capable of, right? Even, like I wasn't super successful as a wrestler by any means. I was okay. But I learned that like I could grind it out and I could run. Like I've never ran farther than I did during wrestling practice, right? And I hated it, but like I knew like it was cool to find out I could do it. It was cool, like there were so many things that wrestling taught me, like that I didn't get from other sports. So I love wrestling and I think it's great. And I wish like it seems like wrestlers are a pretty big like sport where they just do wrestling year round, right? Like wrestling season's over and then it's getting ready for Fargo and Nationals and all these big, summer stuff. And then like once summer comes and it's freestyle and Greco-Roman time and all these things. And I do wish that like I could see a bigger, I don't know, shift of like wrestlers being multi-sport athletes. And that's just I don't want to like again like that's not wrestling specific, like, right? Like there are volleyball players that would be amazing basketball players or track athletes or softball players that just play volleyball's over and they go club volleyball. And that's a whole separate conversation. Like we don't need to open that can of worms by any means, but like, kind of the comment you made, like I do like there are so many great qualities that you can get from wrestling that I do wish it bled into like those kids would bleed into other sports more often. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, man, and you've made really good points and everything like that. I think in the back, I think about things in a like a sport performance. I can't watch sports anymore. Like I can't watch NFL or college football anymore because I think about like their training. I'm like, what does it take to do that? Anyways, wrestling it always intrigued me. Even when I was wrestling, it's just idea of like, can you go the distance? Like, can you do more? Can you edge out just a little bit more on your competition? Can you just hold it off for another second? Can you just hold this bridge for, I mean, there's a mental fortitude to that that I think a lot of athletes could benefit from. And most of your wrestlers are going to be your more disciplined athletes too, because they understand, like, I got to do what I can to talk myself over the competition. Right, there's guys they're going to lift. There's guys that are going to be work on skill work, and wrestlers are fantastic about skill work. I'll throw that out there. Like they work on their craft year round, whether it's like going to nationals or doing freestyle or and their true wrestling season starting in November, stuff like that. Like they are masters of their craft, and they work on their skill year round. And it's just the aspect of like training year round. In the weight room, sprinting. I'm not asking them to do like a 100 meter dash. Maybe like a 10 into a 30, or a 30 into 10. Sorry, or a 5 into a 10. Like short distance burst, because that's what happens in wrestling. There's gonna be times where you have to get short bursts of energy, and to get out of situations, to do double leg shots, to do throw a kid. I mean, it just happens within seconds. And I mean, you kind of have to train that accordingly outside of skill work as well.
Yeah, no, I like there's so many parallels from with wrestling, like you said, and it's so I it's kind of funny, like some schools, or I'm sorry, some sports are so on the performance side that they neglect the skill work. And then there are sports that are so skill oriented that they neglect that, I'm sorry, they neglect the training, right? Like pitchers that just pitch year round and focus on getting, instead of taking some time off and all these things. And that's why, like, one of the kids that wrestles, they're stud dude, awesome kid. And, we had conversations. I'm like, man, like, you should come run track. Well, coach, he's going to all these national meets. I'm like, look, one, sprinting would be very beneficial. Like, just to help you be explosive. I'm not at, like, or like, you're tough enough. You'd be a great 400 runner. You got the mental, if you can wrestle, you got the mental toughness to run a good 400. But also just to like break up that training monotony of, and like taking a mental break and like just taking, I don't know, just take a little bit of time off of it. Because like wrestling is such a grind, and I don't know if there's a sport that you see more burnout in than wrestling. And because it's also like wrestling is one of the sports that you start when you're like, you'll go out there and you see 4-year-olds wrestling, you know what I mean? Little kids, and like it's just year after year after year after year of just grinding and grinding and grinding. And don't get me wrong, man, like it's little kid wrestling is super cute, like it's so fun and watching them go out there and try to get in a stance and shoot. But it's a grind, and so like to, like just focusing on skill, like I'm sorry, like you can kind of like like the famous Bruce Lee quote, like I don't fear the guy that knows 1,000 kicks or whatever, like I fear the guy that's practiced one kick 1,000 times. It's kind of like that same way, but like at a certain point, like when you're a young kid, like okay, you've taken 1,000 shots, like go take something else, like go try something else, go try cross country, whatever. And just kind of break up that like mental strain, because it's I just, and I feel like I've said this 10 times already, but like it's a grind, man. That's why I'm saying I have such a respect for wrestlers, and they work so hard. They're such hard workers that I just wish, like, I just hope to see things kind of shift towards a more optimal model. I don't know. That seems, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but just different. And like, if those guys can attack it a little bit more efficiently, and then like that, like, and then imagine the benefits they'll see, and that'll just carry over into other sports. Gosh. Wrestling's awesome though. That's the most important. If I could say one takeaway, dude, wrestling is awesome. And I know, like you said, it's not huge down south, and I wish it was, because it is. It's such a great sport, man. You go watch high school wrestling in Iowa. I remember, like, we were like pretty close to the Iowa border. My freshman year was the first year that my high school, they had wrestling like a long, long time ago, and then they dropped it. My freshman year, they got it back, and we took a field trip. I was only one of two, three kids on the team that had ever wrestled before, and so our head coach took us on a field trip across the Mississippi River to Iowa to watch this. It was a like a conference duel, for the conference championship duel, between Keokuk and Fort Madison. That's irrelevant, but they had cheerleaders, like they had music, they had spotlights, and they were getting announced, and the gym was packed, and it was like it was such a huge atmosphere, and it was just like so like so crazy, man, just to see, like, it felt like a Friday night football game, like a huge, like a playoff football game. Like it was awesome. And like Saturday wrestling tournaments are such a fun, awesome experience, and like they're so cool to watch, right? And it's such a good, cool, awesome sport that like some too, I don't think enough people like appreciate, like track and field.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and start wrapping some things up, man. Always done this. Almost forgot it last episode, but remembered it. Conjugate Coach Spotlight. Is there anyone out there that you want to highlight in the field of strength conditioning?
Man, I'm gonna shout out. I was trying to like think about this, because I figured you were gonna ask this. There's so many guys, and there's so many guys that have already been shouted out that are so deserving. One guy that comes to mind, just because he's an Illinois coach, he's just doing such a great job. Got to represent my state guys. Brian Adams, he's up in Girard, Illinois. Brian does a bang up job, dude. He just got the program of excellence last year. He's an incredible guy, like an incredible strength coach. We kicked it last weekend at our NHSSEA state clinic. He's such a cool dude. Like, I just think he does such a great job, and he's in a small rural school that's not surrounded by anything. And so I just, he's kind of isolated, and he's just doing such an awesome job, with the Tigers. He owes me a rain, because when I was at Macomb, our volleyball team beat their volleyball team in the regional championship. And so I'm still waiting to collect that, like going on 2 years, Brian. And I remind you every time I see you, and you, so someday. But Brian Adams, if you, I think he's on Twitter. I think it's B Adams 21 or something like that. Awesome guy. Go follow Brian. He puts out great stuff.
Awesome, Andrew. Well, again, I want to thank you for taking the time and sitting down and talking about basically track and field and wrestling, man. Those are two sports that I think deserve a lot of love and can be pushed in a positive direction. Especially track and field has been pushed in such a positive direction, especially with, someone like Tony Holler really pushing this idea of fatigue's the enemy, full rest. maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4 reps. 'Cause I think he posted the other day, it's like, try this track and field workout. It was like 3 sets of 200 meter runs. And I sat there and thought about that. It's like, that's easy until you go do it and you're like, all right, yeah, I'm smoked, you know, whatever. So, again, awesome job, Andrew. Thanks again for being on the pod, man.
Thanks for having me. Quick little plug here. If you haven't, please go check out the NHSSCA podcast. Monty Sparkman was on last month, and I've got some tremendous feedback from the episode. Monty did an incredible job. I know Monty's done a lot of podcasts. He was on this one. I think he was your first guest, I think. Yeah. And so I remember listening to that. And so anyway, go check that out. Scott Fersen's going to be my guest next month. Incredible conversation with him. That'll drop May 1st. Which is just in a couple of days. And so please go check that out if you wouldn't mind.
Awesome. And that's another episode of the Conjugate Chats. So please stay strong and have a day today.